हरिः
ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so then Bhaktisandarbha Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 4. Bhakti is superior to all other sadhanas, Anucheda 98. So that is we call it the thesis is, thus bhakti is the life of these sadhanas. Bhakti is the abhideya in all cases, but without other sadhanas, bhakti gives us results, right? So bhakti in all cases is the abhideya, because whatever it says in the Vedas, it's always about surrendering to the Lord and serving him in devotion. That's what all verses of the Veda mean. They don't mean anything else. They can be taken in their, secondary, tertiary, quaternary forms, is that you have Krishna, and then Krishna is expanded as a Chaturvyuha, and then Chaturvyuha is expanded as the Purusha avatars, and then from there, then you have, Brahma and Shiva, and then you have the demigods headed by Indra, and then you start getting down into all the Shaktis, and then you can get into the local, the local Vana devis and other, things and gnomes and leprechauns and trolls under the bridge, and just keep going down from there. So, but the potency for any of that is all coming from Krishna. So it's all indicating Krishna. And you have these different features. But the point is it's about serving Krishna himself. Because once you get to that, then these others don't have importance, because where that worship would be of whatever that personality is, you put in the original personality, the source of all that. So there isn't some other abhideya. That's the point. So when you say Sambandha, it's about the relationship of the living entity with Krishna. And then Abhideya is that service to him, and that prayojana is then pleasing him through pure devotion. Then that doesn't change no matter what shastra you're reading or anything. It's just what's the medium through which is expressing that. If it's Ayurveda, they're expressing through Ayurvedic terms. But still, the working principle of what things do, Krishna is the essence of things. He is what makes things work. The Abhideya is what makes it work, that connection to Krishna and devotion, and that it to please Krishna is the point. So it's not, Ayurveda is not just to have a healthy body, then be a gross materialist. It's to be healthy so you can serve Krishna. Right? So then continuing where we were farther down, those who are not intelligent make worship of Vishnu a subsidiary element of karma, perform for its purposes, right? So instead of that, means bhakti is the primary, and then other religious processes, the secondary religious processes, then they're there to assist in our service to Krishna. Right, I'm using the Varna ashram, my position, whatever I'm doing. I may be cooking for Krishna, doing my work for Krishna, taking a bath for Krishna. But all of those, the purpose is to please Krishna. That's the only point of them. Now, there isn't some other point. So the primary is the bhakti, and the secondary is using this the elements of karma or jnana that are, favorable for your position and nature and situation, that you engage in the Lord's service, right, to express your bhakti. But here now he's pointing out that those who are not intelligent make worship of Vishnu a subsidiary element of karma. They take karma as important, right? In other words, they want to go to the heavenly planets, or they want something nice here, and we're talking about the religious ones. That's what we're giving here. So we're not even, that already includes and kicks out those who are working below in sub-religious principles. On the Pranamoya platform, they just want, the social morality, the social perfection, and everything like that. And that will make everything work. and then thinking because of that, now bhakti will have its basis. So that was reversed. That's a lower, that even gets more twisted. The other one, okay, they want that, but they've gone to Vishnu for it. So instead of just doing their karma and the demigods, they may be worshiping Vishnu, but they just want their karma, right? So it can be just they're worshiping the demigods and all that, and then doing their karma. And because in that demigod worship, you have to worship Vishnu, or they can be worshiping Vishnu because they just want to go to the heavenly planets or get wealthier, this or that, you know, so those kind of things. So, but still, the point is they're acknowledging Vishnu in this. But he is subsidiary. He is the secondary, and the primary is the karma. The secondary is the bhakti. Well, in actuality, bhakti is the primary, and these elements of the Vedic culture are secondary. So he's saying those who are not intelligent, then they do it this way. You know, by that offense, bhakti only gives results of what the person desires materially, right? Because it's an offense. It means it can only work because of bhakti. That's the system. So since it's only working because of bhakti, you should do it in connection with bhakti. So bhakti should be the primary, and the karma should be the secondary. And then you use it in that, and then use it in working in karma yoga. So there may be some desire, but the main thing is about Krishna, but you have some residue desire, or it becomes more advanced, more emotive goodness. So then one situated in nishkam karma yoga instead of sakam karma yoga. So then the aspects, it moves forward So because it's seen from that bhakti is the secondary, bhakti doesn't give the result of bhakti, even though you're performing it. That's the mistake that we see in the, you know, in the contemporary, well, probably in all times, but in the Hindu society, is they will take it that I'm using bhakti, so therefore I'm getting the benefit of bhakti and getting what I want. But in actuality, because they've reversed it, they're only getting the material. You know, but it's working because the bhakti is there, but because of the offense, they won't get the spiritual. You can say, but because of the offense, they shouldn't get the material. But the point is they are using bhakti, which is the actual purpose. So they're better than people who don't understand bhakti or use it. Because we have to remember, it's about getting the living entity out. It's about elevating them up through these stages. Right? So this is the slow path. You know, like this, so many lives, that, so many lives. Eventually they come up, and then they may at some point have the opportunity to meet the devotees. The idea is it'll just keep going around and around in circles, because karma, you do the good karma, you go up. And then when it exhausts because of the cause and effect of what the work they did before, they'll come back down. So at some point, they're always going up in piety and going down in impiety. And in that, the piety always has to be bhakti. But because it's not done for bhakti's sake, for pleasing Krishna, therefore, that offense they don't get, they only get the material. But it's because of it, because it's using bhakti, then they don't have a problem with those who are situated in bhakti. Right? Need something said? They're situated in bhakti. And so because they're situated, because they're using bhakti, therefore the devotees who are doing bhakti, it's all, same, you know, like that. And so because of that, then they'll invite devotees to their house and do programs or go to the temple and take darshan on the big festival days and things like that. Now they're actually engaged in bhakti. They may be approaching it, you know, as a secondary means to get their karma. So from that aspect, because the devotees are engaging them, then it starts becoming a jata, then they're getting a jata sukriti. Right? Now at some point they could think and go, if I have to do this and that, and bhakti gives up, why am I going for these lower things? And then they switch. Then they get actual faith, and then they start the Shraddha to Prema process. That's the direct path or the quick path. But otherwise, using their Hindu Bindu one, that will take, that can keep them, they've been, in other words, we've been doing that since time immemorial. You know, we don't know how long we've been here, you know. But it can be Yeah, it's too long. Whatever it is, it's too long. Right. So that's the thing, is that we have the opportunity to pick this up and make it go for what do you call it? Yeah, and just switch to the quick path. So that's what he's saying. Let's not, those who are not intelligent, because we're talking about intelligence here, meaning spiritual intelligence, that we're the soul and we're trying to get out of here and go back to Godhead. So if you're not applying your intelligence there, that's not intelligent. Actual intelligence is meant to, the consciousness is meant to be focused on Krishna. Intelligence is meant to understand the path of bhakti and practice that according to the acharyas. The mind is there to see what is the actual taste is in the spiritual, not the material. The senses are to be engaged in the Lord's service. The body is to be engaged in the Lord's service. So that's actually what things are for. And so if you're not doing that, then you are less intelligent. It doesn't mean that they don't have intelligence. You know, they take an IQ test and they get something good, but that's not necessarily indicative of intelligence. I remember the other day seeing something where there was somebody had done a study on, they were doing a study basically on people's attitudes, social, it was a social experiment, but they were also checking for, you know, intelligence like that. And so they had this wide range of people. They had, I think it had one or, you know, one definite PhD, you know, in you know, some variety of biology, and they worked in that in some big company. And then some other, you know, a few other, I think at least in one other academic, a few, what do you call it, you know, entrepreneurs or something, or someone who is working in some kind of high level thing, but, you know, didn't have a high degree. And then at the bottom of it, they had somebody who had, was, I think they were a Marine. So they were in the military, but that means that they're specialized, right? And they only had a high school education. After high school, they decided to join the military and not go to further education. So in the beginning, then they started asking each one of them. They went through all six of them and asked each of them, from most intelligent to least, less intelligent, how would you classify everybody who was there, all six participants? So each one, then, of course, the PhD went out there on the top, and then the next one who seemed to be educated, and then, okay, then the professional in this, and put the military guy in the bottom. Some other guys put him a little bit more up. He never got past, I think, the third position like that. And then whatever it is. Then finally, you know, they've done all the things and everybody's like that. Then having done that, then they handed out the IQ test. All of them sitting there then filled it out and all that, handed it in. The lowest on the IQ was the PhD. And I don't remember if it was the highest or the number two in the IQ was the military guy. He was either the top or he was number two. And then after that, so it went through all the practical people, were professional, practical entrepreneurs. They actually had higher IQ, and the more academics, they had the lower and lower. I think the, what do you call it? The PhD was 112, which I don't think is considered very high. Yeah. So like that, while the others were up in, you know, 130s, 150s and things like that. And, you know, which 150, I think is quite good. I think 130 is considered, 130 or 40 is? The gene, 145 plus. So this guy was, I think, in the 156 or something like that. And then others were, you know, 130s and this and that. So, you know, they were all good. And that one, 112 is lowest, you know. Yeah, the only one less than her was, yeah, she can read, yeah. So was, I think, the Adam Sandler's The Water Boy, you know, like that, you know. So that was, yeah. Yes. Okay. So now, why are they less intelligent? Because it gives impermanent results. It's not that you're super intelligent. You can put all these things together and stack it up like this and that. It's a matter of, it gives, why would you put the same endeavor? Because bhakti is the abhideya. You're putting in technically the same endeavor. and getting a temporary result. Well, if it's done with bhakti as a primary, you get an eternal result. And then whatever it is that's going to be favorable for your devotional service, you will get the material result also. But it's not material because it's in the fire of Krishna consciousness. But it's the form, external form that you're hoping for. And it will be temporary, but it gives you permanent results. Okay, that's interesting. Prabhu said that Krishna gives in the Gita, Prabhupada's talking about Krishna in karma, result for the living entity. He only gives what he would have given him anyway for his devotional service. So therefore, there's no material result is given at all. So it gives no result. So that means the point is that for the materialists, they're not getting the spiritual, they're only getting material according to what they would have gotten by karma. And for the devotee, they're going to get whatever they would have gotten by devotion. Because it's about the path of devotion, you're going to give what's going to be like that. Just like we see, sometimes there's the situation. I mean, nowadays it may not be relatable by the present society, this standard that their consciousness is at. But let's say previously you had some different persons, and so then there's going to be, or let's say like the father. Okay, he has so many sons. Now, one of them is very, very clever, practical, responsible, all these qualities. And then he has some sons that are not so intelligent. Now, they're nice guys, but no real potential for, let's say, taking up the reins of managing whatever his lands or his business or his position, whatever, you know, something that requires. So we might see that he's more strict with the son who has the potential and more just pleasant and kind with the one who doesn't. So one may say, why is it this and that? Because he's the one that needs the most training that he can do the highest thing. So you may see that element for those who have the consciousness that can appreciate that, Krishna can push more. And if it's just, no, he's just a nice guy and he can't handle any pressure, then Krishna will just go along however it is like that, but you'll move slower forward. So, yeah, the Acharya continues, if the same person does bhakti independent of karma for attaining material results, bhakti certainly gives the results desired. Right? So if he's just engaged in devotional service, but he has a desire for those things, then those things will come. You know, and Krishna will give in such a way that, as Prabhupada also mentions, that Krishna will fulfill your desire, but in such a way that you don't desire it anymore. Right? You'll get that Ferrari, but then, you know, there's so much trouble with it and people harassing and sitting on your car whenever you're parking and taking all their selfies and all that. And, you know, you come back to the car and there's some dude there with some girl and talking about how it's his car and trying to impress the girl, you know, until you push your little fob, you know, key fob, and and you start the engine, and then they look around and go, oh, you know, yeah. So, yeah. So things like that. Then you just decide, what's the point of this? You know, it's a nice car and that, but where can you drive it? In the city, you know, you're having to go 30 miles an hour, you know, unless you're, where is it, in Ireland? They dropped it to 20. Something like just 20. It's just like Ferrari, 20. Ferrari, 20. It can do 200. You're doing 20. Why not? It would be easier just to have a Fiat 500. Then you're happy. 20 is good. You know, as long as the fender doesn't fall off or, you know, the wheel comes loose, then, you know, doing 20, you're great. You know, so you just see. So Krishna fulfills it in such a way that there will be trouble with it because you want the material things Krishna will give you, but it's coming from bhakti. But it will also inspire you to continue the bhakti and give up the material desire. Like that. So there'll still be trouble. Because why Krishna give it to you? Because you have material desire. That's why there's trouble. You give up the material desire, where's the trouble? Yeah. But it does not end in giving only those results. It also gives the highest results, right? So it's going to bring you closer and closer to pure devotional service. Thus, bhakti is the abhidhaya because it gives the highest benefit, right? So the other, because they don't know, because the offense, right? When bhakti is subservient to karma, then bhakti takes offense to that, gives the karma. If you do the, you know, according to your work, you do the right work, you get the work. You do excellent work, you get better results. You do cheap work, you get cheap results, right? But it doesn't give the devotional results, even though you have to perform bhakti to make it work, right? And the bhakti means you're doing it according to what's supposed to be done, with some kind of, you know, sentiment to do it sincerely, like that. But you're not doing it to please Krishna, you're doing it to please yourself. Then if you do bhakti independent from karma, then you still get the material results, but it's without the you know, there's no need. You're just doing the devotional service. So let's say the devotees that say in the 60s and 70s, you know, early 80s, and they may be doing more direct activities, may have material desires. So they're not even performing the karma. They're not even, let's say, they don't even understand Varnashram, not working within it. They're getting those results. You know, so they're just dependent on Bhagavat and Pancharatric systems. And the slightest touch of the Daiva Varnashram, but not really enough to make it scientific. But they're still using it. And so then they're getting those results, and it's only about bhakti. But as you see, as people need to engage their nature, you introduce scientifically the Daiva Varnashram, which simply means scientifically understanding the Varnashram that the devotees were following when Prabhupada was present, but they didn't understand the science. They didn't apply it with knowledge and intelligence there. They just kind of, you know, did some of it. It's kind of like part of their sadhana, which is nice because it's part of bhakti. But, you know, because they need these more independence, more family, more my money and whatever it is, then you need to scientifically understand. So you're just adding a little bit more of understanding. It doesn't actually change what you're doing. It just changes your understanding. So it becomes properly Daiva Varnashram. You know, that is subservient to the Pancharatric and the Bhagavat processes, like that. So therefore, bhakti is all the way through, whether you see it just as secondary, whether you see it as primary, it's always the Abhideya, and it gives the results independent, because it independently doesn't give the spiritual results and only gives the material results. And then if you're doing that mixed devotional service, but it's focused on the devotional service as primary, then you're going to and then it's still giving the results of both, but in such a way that it brings it, you know, the higher. And so then we can see is that bhakti is the one that gives the is the Abhideya, gives the results. So then quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam, satyam drishat artitam artito nirinam naivartado yad punar artita yata Swayam vidhate bhajatam anichatam icha pidanam nijapada pallavam. The Lord certainly gives desired objects to devotees who request them, but he does not give those objects in such a way that the devotee will ask again after finishing his enjoyment. In other words, he gives his lotus feet, which include all desirables, to those worshippers who do not even desire them. Right, so he's giving the shelter of his lotus feet to those who don't even necessarily fully desire. But because they're approaching him in devotion, where the devotion is the primary element, then we see he does, but in such a way that he will not ask again. Right, he goes into that, but at some point, then you have to, that's enough. You know, like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:19:27. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The devotees mentioned in the previous verse approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead with material motives. But this verse explains how such devotees are saved from those desires. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:3:10 advises. Akama sarvakama va moksha kama utaradhi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Or whether one is freed from all material desires, is full of material desires, or desires to become one with the Supreme, he should engage in devotional service. End quote. In this way, not only will the devotee's desires be fulfilled, but The day will come when he will have no other desires than to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? So whether you're on the platform of karma, on the gyan, or on, what do you call it? Yeah, freed from all material desires, full of material desires, or desires to become of the supreme. Because you're following the path properly, and you're worshiping Vishnu. Because if they're not worshiping Vishnu and they're worshiping demigods or trying for anything else, that's not what is recommended in the Vedas. They're just making up their system. But because to worship any of these personalities and all that, you have to have the aspects of bhakti in it. And especially when you get to upasana kanda, you have to have the worship of Vishnu. Right? So, yeah, so then you see is he will remove those desires. Right? One who engages in the service of the Lord with some motive is called a sakama bhakta. One who serves the Lord without any motives is called an akama bhakta. Krishna so mercifully turns the sakama bhakta into an akama bhakta. A pure devotee, an akama bhakta who has no material motives, is satisfied simply to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 6:22. Yam ladva cha param labham manyate nadikam tata. If one engages in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, he does not want anything more. This is the highest stage of devotional service. The Lord is so kind even to a sakama bhakta, a motivated devotee, that he satisfies his desires in such a way that one day he becomes an akama bhakta. Dhruva Maharaj, for example, became a bhakta with the motive of getting a better kingdom than that of his father. But finally he became an akama bhakta and said to the Lord, Swamin kritartosmi varam nayache. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:41. My dear Lord, I am very satisfied simply to serve your lotus feet. I do not want any material benefits. Sometimes it is found that a small child eats dirty things, but his parents take away the dirty things and offer him a sandesh or some other sweetmeat. Devotees who aspire for material benedictions are compared to such children. The Lord is so kind that he takes away the material desires and gives them the highest benediction. Therefore, even for material motives, one should not worship anyone other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must fully engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord so that all his desires will be fulfilled. And at the end, he can go back home, back to Godhead. This is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:37 through 39 and 41 as follows. Anyakami. A devotee may desire something other than the Lord, other than the service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Yadi kare krishnera bhajana. But if he engages in Lord Krishna's service, na magi teha krishna tare dhena svacharana. Krishna gives him shelter at his lotus feet, even though he does not aspire for it. Krishna kahe, the Lord says, atma bhaje. He is engaged in my service. Maghe vishaya sukha, but he wants the benefits of material sense gratification. Amrita chadi visha maghe. Such a devotee is like a person who asks for poison instead of nectar. E bara murka, that is his foolishness. Bara means big and murka means fool, right? Ami vigya, but I am experienced. E murke vishaya at kene diva. You know, so Krishna's saying here, why should I give such a foolish person the dirty things of material enjoyment? Swacharana mrita. It would be better for me to give him shelter at my lotus feet. Vishaya gulai bha. I shall cause him to forget all material desires. Kama laghi Krishna bhaje. If one engages in the service of the Lord for sense gratification, Paya Krishna Rase, the result is that he ultimately gets a taste for serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Kamachari Dasahaite Haya Abhilase. He then gives up all material desires and wants to become an eternal servant of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:19-27 purport. Okay, so in the purport he's describing from that Madhya Lila 22:37-39 and 41 verses. Being requested, the Lord gives what humans ask. The Lord never fails in this regard, satyam. But the Lord does not just give, for by just giving, material desire will not be extinguished, since when the enjoyment is finished without being fully satisfied, the person again will request the desired object. Yatah purnar artita, right? Then quoting from Manu, desires are not extinguished by enjoying the objects of desire, just as fire increases by adding ghee, right? So you put things into the fire, you know, to burn, and it just increases the fire. It doesn't satisfy it. So that's the whole point that's there, is that he gives the desire to the devotee, but having fulfilled that, the devotee will enjoy that, but he, when the enjoyment's over, he'll want again. So Krishna arranged in such a way that bring him closer to his lotus feet so that he doesn't keep asking. Because it's foolish. It's like the child wanting to eat dirt. It's not, you'll get any benefit. Child really wants to eat dirt, but no, eat the sandesh. It's better. And so with time, he gets the taste for the sandesh, and the dirt's not important anymore. Right? So we see the principle. How many people eat dirt when they're older? No, it's only when you're really small. But once you get a taste for, you know, food, then, you know, you give that up. The supremely merciful Lord gives these people his lotus feet, just as a mother takes chewed dirt from the mouth of her child and gives him sugar candy. This is because their bhakti is intense, as expressed in the following. The first quote, the person desiring destruction of all desires, the person with all desires, and even the person with an intense desire for liberation, he has good intelligence, will worship the Supreme Lord with pure bhakti. Interesting. Whether one is freed from all material desires, is full of all material desires, or desires to become one with the Supreme, he should engage in devotional service. And then another form of the translation, the person desiring destruction of all desires, the person with all desires, and even the person with an intense desire for liberation, if he has good intelligence, will worship the Supreme Lord with pure bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:3-10. In other words, these two angles are there. So the first one, he's then explaining in that context, having explained it, now this will be appreciated, right? If he has good intelligence like that. So that's the point. So those grammarians who are so-called grammarians, because if they've done grammar in the West in the university, right? Now in university, when you go, if English is not your first language, you're not very good at it, you don't know English at all, then the university, then for the first 6 months, teaches you English 101, right? And so it's learned at the university level, right? So then one is going to think within his mind, I know university level English and grammar, but what they just taught you is what they teach in grade school. But because you're older, instead of taking 6 years, you can do it in 6 months. But it's the same material. It's not the advanced levels. Therefore, if you go to university, yeah, sorry if I'm laughing during explanation of this. If you're going to university and you take Sanskrit, you're learning what they teach to children. The grade school grammar. You're not learning high level grammar. Yeah, and then you're learning it at the university, so you think you're at the university level of Sanskrit. And while someone, let's say, who went to a proper gurukul and learned Sanskrit in the traditional way, he knows 10 times, 100 times more grammar than you. But you'll think you're superior because you got it from the university. This foolish mentality then tries to say, oh, the acharyas, this is not literal. It should be like this and that. Yeah, that's like a third grader, like telling you, oh, your English is wrong. That's in reality what we're dealing with. Now, no one will want to hear that. No one will be able to digest that. But that's the reality. Therefore, if it comes down between some devotees saying, well, Prabhupada didn't know the grammar well, or Prabhupada doesn't know the social situation well, or doesn't understand the political or anything like that, then it's the same as a third grader saying, you know, pontificating on these things and thinking Prabhupada doesn't know. That's like saying, I've studied the reflection in the mirror. I know what's going on. And the other guy who hasn't studied, I've spent, you know, 10 hours studying the reflection in the mirror. But this other guy standing over there, he's not studying it. He looks now and again, but he's not as experienced as I am in looking into the mirror. But the problem is, from using that, I can't actually connect it to reality. Well, the actual person, they can look in the mirror and say, okay, this is wrong. But they're looking to seeing what's going on in the real world. And so the person who knows the form and knows what the mirror does, then he doesn't understand the reflection. But the guy who sits there staring at the reflection with his back to the actual object, then he knows. We have to be real here. And false ego is not a basis of measurement if something is good or not. It's called false ego for a reason. It's not real. It's not truth. It's not transcendental. So we have to be able to appreciate this. This before would have been, you know, like that. Now it's like, oh, you can't say that. You know, we have to accommodate him. But he thinks he's, you know, an advanced, you know, Vaishnav who's standing on his head, who's backwards, whose hair is pink, and he speaks in reverse. You know, we have to accommodate. No, we don't. As long as, I mean, if he wants to chant on that and take prasad, that's fine. But if he wants to tell us about Prabhupada and what he's saying, the acharyas and all that, what's the process? No. We just take the acharyas. Next verse. Quote, though the worshiper does not ask, the Lord gives him what is most rare, unattainable by the mind and senses. Garuda Purana 2:234-12. So he gives him devotional service, even though he's not asking. That's why when you come in contact with devotional service from the devotees who are practicing, who are on that, they have that faith, then you are working in that realm. Because that's what you know. The weakness will be is those who are not hearing it from that source, just they're getting it from the Vedas and from some other, you know, this one or that one, then they are not from the Vaishnav Sampradayic lines, then they're going to be the ones who we're talking about as just an offense. So there's no bhakti gain. But those who have come and gotten from the devotees, then you're getting, it's coming from the aspect of bhakti. Though that's not what they're interested in, they're into the material desire. They worship the Lord. They want what they want. But because they've come in contact with devotional service and they're performing it, you know, under the direction of the devotees, the pure devotees, therefore, then it's going to give that result. That's where Krishna is going to trick them. Even those others, he's going to put them in contact. They're going to see devotees. They're going to meet devotees. They're going to have an opportunity. Someone will come up and sell them a book. You know, now it's marathon, right? It's December. So, you know, books are going out, you know, so it's, they're going to bump into them. You know, if there's any sincerity to know, they will. If there's no sincerity, then they'll just go on. But we're talking about those who have come in contact. So that's going to be, yeah. Acharya continues. It is understood that the Kumaras, though Brahmagyanis, attained the lotus feet of the Lord by performance of bhakti, right? Because they went to Vaikuntha to see the Lord. Take darshan of the Lord. So it's a devotional activity. They wanted to see the Lord. No, they're just thinking him as the Supreme Brahman, and they're absorbed in Brahman. And not, so they weren't thinking it as a devotional activity as such. They're thinking as part of the process of Brahman realization. But when they got there, because of that desire, when the Lord came, then seeing the Lord, bowing down and seeing the Lord, then they saw that the happiness they got from smelling the tulsi at the lotus feet of the Lord was much greater than the Brahman realization they had. And they knew they had no material desire. So they knew this can't be material. It has to be spiritual. So there's a higher level. So they went from that Brahman level of the Lord then up to, you know, the Paramatma or Bhagavan aspect of serving the Lord. So, but they're known as the 12 Mahajans. So then it has to go to the Bhagavan level. You know, so that's what came. They weren't looking for it. but they were following the devotional process. So that's the advantage of the Vedic system over all other systems. Is even if you're following it materially, if it's done proper according to Sampradaya, the results will come through so nicely, so much more quickly. And if it's done in the contact of devotees, then it's even more. So this idea is that we won't use the Vedic system. We're going to use some modern system. What in the American lifestyle elevates you? You know, your consciousness. What in the eating? What in the American eating habits elevates your consciousness? What in how you dress, how you interact with people raises your consciousness? Which one of them? You know, where is the schedule that the American society has on what time you go to bed, what time you get up, you know, what time you take your bath, when do you brush your teeth? That is elevating to the consciousness. Like that, we can go on one after another. And as it said, you know, if it doesn't work the $100, then, you know, the $10, $5, $1 points are already made. So if it doesn't work in America, it's not going to work anywhere else. You know, they are the leading materialists of the day. So this whole idea is that, you know, we're going to follow this Western, this Upadivad, you know, Western culture as a religion. It has zero qualities to uplift you. That's why when asked about after visiting London, then somebody asked Mahatma Gandhi what he thought of Western culture, you know, and this is, you know, this would have been, you know, 100 years ago or something, you know. And so then when there was a little bit more on the culture and the stiff upper lip and your what do you call it, your bowler and your brully and, you know, your suit and tie, your vest, you know, the whole thing, you know, your pocket watch, and, you know, everything. But he said, yeah, that would be a nice idea. Meaning there is no culture. There's nothing elevating. The only thing we'll do is take you deeper and deeper into sense gratification, especially if you give up even what they would consider classical Western thing and take up these more modern liberal things. It's getting rid of anything that has some connection with religion. Because they're saying a Christian gentleman, there is some connection back to the religion that, you know, you don't steal, harass, you're nice to others and things like that. You don't take the guy's donkey. So that, you know, means you don't take his car, you know, or his bicycle or his motorcycle or his roller blades or his skateboard, you know. So in other words, you don't take from your neighbor. And so like that. But what in the modern, what is there? It's like, you know, up to $900 you can steal it, you know, because you need it because you're so unfortunate and all that like that. So, yeah, it's stupid. So the whole thing is there's nothing elevating. Say what you want. If there is any elevating, look at it. It goes back to religion. And what is making it work? That's what's defined in bhakti, what's defined in the Vedic literature. The suffering? Narad Muni points out on, if you can, is the suffering from engaging in material life elevating? So then when he's describing Varnashram to Yudhishthira Maharaj in the seventh canto, then he's going over through what's the duties and how, in other words, how the four varnas and four ashrams are, what their duties are and how it's elevating to them. Then he mentions, you know, and how it's supposed to be engaged in devotional service. So in other words, he's describing Daiva Varnashram. So what much he's talking about, that's what we're doing. You know, it may have a few little practices, but that's not the major thing. It's the point he's making. And even more important, the next three chapters is describing the Paramahamsa and how the society works and all that. So generally, most people don't look at those next three chapters as part of Varnashram. But unless you understand those three chapters, you won't actually understand Daiva Varnashram. You know, so he's given all the principles. But then he mentions that for those not following the Vedic culture, the Malechas, you know, like that, then for them, then because of their material life, then they become frustrated. And there's a small window that's there that if there's any sincerity and they come in contact with the devotee, you know, by Paramatma's arrangement, they can take up devotional service and connect themselves into this process, even though they have no background or samskar or qualification for it. But simply because the soul is supposed to be doing devotional service and all that, and the elements of the Daiva Varnashram are still coming from the, those aspects of piety. In other words, you're using the six qualities of the soul, you know, in a recommended way, in a pious way. You know, it means the inherent need for what is it that you have? Justice, truth, affection, friendship, honesty. That mixing one. Compassion, I think, yeah, maybe compassion. That might be affection is compassion. I can just check here. Okay. Purity. So righteousness, you know, which also means justice, righteousness, truth, purity. Then friendship, honesty, affection. Right? And that, you know, friendship can be compassion, you know, about this. So it means as many, you can find some synonyms that the acharyas will use when they're describing these six. So those are inherent qualities of the soul. That's the qualities of the soul. It means the constitution of the soul is Satchitananda, and their nature is service. Right? Even on the material platform, anything material works because of service. As soon as you step away from service, it stops working. Right? You know, it's just like before you had the thing of the masculine-feminine dynamic, and the feminine nature was the mood of service, but she was treated like a princess. Now they demand to be treated like a princess, but there's no service and nobody's interested. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing, or the man must have, you know, money and this and that and so many things and do all these works and all that, and I'm going to do nothing. But there's no, it's all their service, but then you don't see it brings out the qualities of chivalry. Before they're chivalrous, so naturally they serve. But they just want them to serve. I will not serve, they will serve. And then I'm going to be the princess and he'll be the chivalrous prince. No, it won't happen. She'll be a lonely girl and he'll be a passport bro. Yeah. So I like that. So, okay. So those qualities themselves, those six qualities, they're known as, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, as the ornaments of the soul. So they're always going to be there. So if they're reflected and the only perversion is, you know, from the, it's about themselves rather than the Krishna, it will be in its more in its, the form of it, you know, following the Daiva Varnashram will be a more pious form. It's known, they're all in the material world, they're known as piety. Right? But if they're not following, then as it, they go farther away from the Vedic system, it starts to become distorted. So then the sense of righteousness is, you know, because you came into his area there, the snake feels righteous to bite you. You know, like that, you know, it gets distorted. It's still, he's doing that because of righteousness. He's not doing it something else. You know, so he does all those things, you know. And so all you'll see, all those qualities will be there in any living entity, but it's just in what form they'll be. Like nowadays people say, oh, we want the truth. But the truth for them is not Krishna. It's not the tattva. It's facts. And which facts? Those facts that I can politically use for my own benefit. You explain other facts that actually explain what's going on. They don't want to hear it. They only want to hear the fact that they can use against you for their own purpose. That's it. That's called truth. That's not true. Truth means how, what's the connection with Krishna? Krishna is the measurement. How much is connection with Krishna? Process of devotional service, the parampara, the scriptures, that's truth. Anything else is not truth, but they use the word truth. That's distorted. They're cheating. And purity, what's purity? You know, the Germans also were thinking purity, right? Tall, blonde, blue-eyed, that's pure. Anything else is not pure. Even though I think Hitler had brown eyes. Yeah, I mean, I think from his mother's side, there was something there. You know, mother's father or something. So technically, he wasn't Jewish, but at the same time, there was some there. Yes, he was there. Yeah, he, so in other words, he wasn't a Jew. He was Jewish.
Yes.
Yeah. So whatever. So I think there's always going to be there. What's pure? You know, oh, it's just us. We're just aristocratic at the club. It's pure. Someone else walks in. He's not pure. You know, oh, we're aristocratic. They're common people. Oh, we're common people. We're pure. And all these, you know, aristocratic. They're all impure. They just, you know, think about money and that. No relationships. Everybody has this concept of what's pure and not pure. You know, you have a dogs are walking around. They're cool. A cat comes along. Ugh, you know, this is a problem. You know, so, you know, there's always going to be a problem like that to these things. You know, affection, they have affection for their own people who they would be friends with and things like that. That, you know, they show compassion to those who they want. You know, it's just like to our own children, we're compassionate, but to enemies' children, then we'll, you know, boil them in oil. We don't mind because it's for a higher purpose. So it doesn't matter, even though it's just, it's not, it's wrong. It's not actually righteous. It's your own concept of righteous. Like that, you know, and honesty means is, means what they declare is honesty. That's if you say that, it's, if I say yes, you know, I'm being white, you know, it's all the problems of the world because of me. You're being honest when it's actually not factual. You know, slavery, you know, basically came from Africa and Asia, you know, and they used it. And then the Europeans picked it up. You know, they probably already had their own. Yeah, they refined it, but then that, but at the same time, they're the ones that got rid of it and then got rid of it in the rest of the world. But at the same time, as then you still have those that underlying it's all going on, but at least not officially. You know, so the whole point is it's all these things. It's this, that they be just humans, if they're not following properly, then they get distracted by things. You know, so that's the whole point is that if you're fixed in devotional service, then all these natural qualities get used properly, right? The Satchidananda, you're using it properly. All these six qualities are used properly. The service is used properly. You know, instead of, you know, it means in the leftist concept, service means service to the state. You know, and then for those who are within the bureaucracy, then it's service to themselves. It means they have a thing of service to the state, but they're doing it for themselves. And the others, the common people, are serving the state so that the state doesn't bother them, so it's for themselves. So ultimately, there's no real service, but there's still the concept. But it's slavery, right? Isn't that the aphorism? Freedom is slavery. That's one of the Orwellian. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is knowledge. Yeah, or something like that. They have all these things. It is okay, continuing. Oh, how are we doing on time? Okay. It is understood that the Kumaras, though Brahmagyanis, attain the lotus feet of the Lord by performance of bhakti. The Devas spoke thus among themselves, right? So the Devas are discussing because they discuss what's the higher thing, like we see in Manu. This must be further along in the conversation. Because in Manu, this conversation is brought up that the demigods are discussing who's higher, the Urser or banker, you know, which is considered really low class. Means for a Vaishya, he's taking care of cows, land, and if need be, he has extra, he trades. That's okay. That's good. People, other people need, it's good, you know, like that. But the banker is considered low class in the Vedic because you see, they will just do whatever they can to, you know, squeeze every last. No, they add zero value to the thing. All they've done is work out a way to take money. And every time it keeps getting worse. Like before, when you did a mortgage, you know, I mean, at least when I was a kid, you did a mortgage. Technically, the house is yours. You own the house. And if you sold the house, you sold, you know, the mortgage and they continued like that. But, you know, you have 30 years if it doesn't. But the modern is no, the house belongs to the bank. And when you pay off the mortgage, then it's yours. So that any time if something happens, there's the default, they can just come and take it. You know, before they had some things, but they've just refined it where they have nothing and then they turn it into things like that. That's all they've done. They're cheating. So in the modern, the bankers are considered very elevated, but in actuality, they're not. You know, it's because of them, the stock market things crash, but then they bail them out and not the common person. So, you know, it's. So that's what we're pointing. So they were discussing this, that you have a banker who's a devotee and you have a practicing Brahmin, high grade Brahmin, who's, you know, expert in all the six occupations of a Brahmin, but he's not a devotee. Who's higher? So they're thinking, well, the one's an urser. So, you know, that really puts it down, but he's a devotee. But the other one's a Brahmin, but he's not a devotee. So they're trying to, so they decide it's equal. And then Brahma comes along and said, why are you making what's equal not equal? I mean, making what's not equal equal. Says, there's no question. The urser, because he's a devotee, he's the superior, because bhakti is superior to all other material consideration, because him being a banker or a Brahmin, these are material. So you could say devotee, Brahmin, banker, that you could do. But as soon as you add devotee to the banker, it's superior. That's why Krishna says, if someone's a devotee, then even if he's doing abominable activities, he's still rightly situated because of that. Now you just have to get rid of the what's wrong. You don't get rid of the bhakti, you get rid of what's wrong. Nowadays, it's because they look at it opposite, because no, he's doing something wrong, he can't do bhakti. No, because he's doing bhakti, it's independent. Now get rid of what's wrong. No, because he's doing something wrong, he can't do bhakti. So then they, you know, you remove all opportunities for bhakti, you know, so he can, you know, materially suffer, and that's the right thing to do, right? So they have no understanding of the devotional process. It's a very neophyte understanding. I'm talking about basically no understanding of what bhakti is. It becomes just an external ritual or a philosophy, and that's it. So here is then spoken, because of bhakti, the Kumaras became, they were Brahma Jnanis, they became devotees. Like that. So that's the whole point. So then I think time is up. Yes. Okay. So then we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Hare Gaudiya.